So my very important question for all of you today, has anyone here, anyone, ever asked the question why before? Never. No one's asked why before. Well, I'm going to tell you, I have heard the question why many times. Part of my role here at TPA, I'm the associate pastor, which means I work with kids, junior high, and youth, and occasionally get to be up here too. With the kids, children ask why so many times. With our after-school program, Spark Kids, for example, they might really, really want to play freeze tag. And they'll say, oh, Pastor Rachel, can we play freeze tag right now? And I'll say, no, not right now, maybe a little bit later. And of course, then they'll say, well, why, Pastor Rachel? And I'll tell them, well, we need to do our story time first. And then they'll say, well, why? And I'll say, well, if we don't do the story time first, you guys will really have trouble paying attention later. And they'll say, well, why? Well, because you'll be so excited and hyped up from running around, there's no way you'll listen to me talk. And then they'll say, well, why? And it can go on and on and on until I get sick of it and say, because I'm the grown-up and I said so. I never liked that saying as a kid, but I really do now. And sometimes we hear that question with things like freeze tag and toddlers asking the never-ending whys. And other times kids ask really hard questions, more serious things. And that's actually part of the reason that I love kids, because they say the things that grown-ups only think sometimes. Grown-ups have this thing called a mental filter, or we're supposed to, and which means that the things we think don't necessarily come out of our mouths. Kids don't have that, which is a good and a bad thing. There was this little boy I knew. His name was Tyler. And Tyler went to the after-school program that I helped out at when I was in college. And Tyler was, he was 7 or 8, and he was honestly just such a sweetie. He was the cutest kid. He always came in. He kind of reminded me of like this little baby bear, and he would just come in with this big smile and positive attitude, and all he wanted to do was play games and build Lego and chat with you about his day. He was just so cute. Everyone loved Tyler. Tyler, like a lot of the kids in that program, came from a lower income housing area. Like a lot of the other kids, he came from a single parent home. Tyler lived with his dad and with his grandma, but he was just such a happy kid. But then one week, he came and he seemed a little out of sorts, and he mentioned that his dad was sick. And every week, he started becoming a little bit more sad, a little less smiley. He seemed a little more stressed. He started mentioning something about a surgery. And then one week, Tyler didn't come to our kids program at all. We didn't see him for about a month, and when he came back, we found out that the sickness his dad had had was cancer, and that the surgery that he had talked about wasn't successful. Tyler's dad had passed away. And so a few weeks went by, and it was Valentine's Day, and we did the stereotypical children's outreach ministry thing for Valentine's Day, and we talked about how God is love, and God loves you, and God loves everyone, and that's when the big question came up. And it was almost more heartbreaking, because it didn't come from a place of anger or from bitterness. It just came from a really sad and a really confused little boy who said, but if God loves me, then why did he let my dad die? Why? This is a question that we can hear from anyone. We can hear it from Christians and non-Christians alike. We hear it from kids and teenagers and adults and seniors. Why? Why me? Why this? And that's because evil and suffering affects every person with no exceptions. We've all asked why before. Some people will ask, God, why would you allow this? Others might question how God could possibly be good with everything that's going on. Some people might question the existence of a God at all when they look at the state of the world around them. So then why? How? It's hard to wrap our heads around. And we're not going to jump right into the why first, because first I really want us to focus on the existence of God. We need to recognize that the existence of evil doesn't eradicate the possibility of God's existence as well. Ronald Nash said, every philosopher believes that the most serious challenge to theism was and is and will continue to be the problem of evil. It's hard to wrap your head around. How could anyone, let alone an all-powerful God, just stand by and allow such evils to happen in this world? It just doesn't make sense to a lot of people, so I guess God just must not exist. That's the easy answer, but it's not necessarily the right answer. Christians believe five things, believe more than five things, but we're going to focus on five. Christians believe, number one, God exists. Number two, God is omnipotent, meaning all-powerful. Number three, God is omniscient, meaning all-knowing. Number four, God is good. And number five, evil exists. Many would argue that there is no possible way that all five of these could possibly be true all at the same time. They would say that there's no way that there's some good, all-powerful, all-knowing God and still the existence of evil. There's no way a God who is good with the power to change things would just watch as people suffer. But if you look at it logically, these five points aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. I mean, how are we to know that this isn't the best option of reality without God allowing something worse to happen as a result? How are we to know that God hasn't already stopped all sorts of incredible evils from happening in this world? How are we to know that eliminating evil wouldn't overthrow all of our free will? How are we to know that allowing a small evil, it could be part of a greater good overall? And these are all sorts of big philosophical, theological kinds of questions and concepts that gave me millions of headaches when I took a philosophy class. And we're going to go more in depth in a few of these later, but I really want us to think and understand that suffering doesn't mean there is no God. When you think about it, the very fact that we can recognize evil in this world actually points to the fact that there is a God. If there were no God, if there were no higher power, if everything was just by chance and we were just random particles and just a happenstance of evolution, then where would we get this moral code that all humans seem to have? The idea of good and bad, right and wrong, is something that we can find in every religion, in every culture. There's always a sense of what is right and what is wrong. We know what injustice is. Even children from a very young age know what injustice is. When they don't get that last cookie, you'll hear, "That's not fair." When they get a timeout because their brother provoked them, "That's not fair." Even kids have this innate sense of right and wrong. In the Bible, we even see Paul making mention of the fact that humans everywhere have this conscience. In Romans, he's talking about the law in this letter that he wrote. He's talking about this moral code that was originally given to the Jewish people. And it says, "The Samaritans do not have the law, but when they freely do things that the law commands, then they are the law for themselves." This is true, even though they don't have the law. They show that in their hearts, they know what is right and wrong, just as the law commands. And they also show this by the way they feel about right and wrong. Sometimes their thoughts tell them they did wrong, and sometimes their thoughts tell them they did right. Now, Paul is addressing the fact that despite people who weren't within the Jewish faith, despite the fact that they had not been given this same moral code, they still knew it in their hearts. They still know what is right and wrong. And that's something that we as humanity have in common. We all have a conscience. We have an internal moral code that must come from somewhere. A lot of people, if you do some research, will claim that these values that we have, they just come from the evolution process. People will say that these beliefs were built up throughout the centuries in humanity as something to help us continue to survive. That we learned these things at our core just so that we could have the survival of the fittest mentality so we'd be able to get by. People believe that these are just natural instincts that have been built up in humanity to help us to survive. But when you really think about it, it doesn't always make sense. Because the problem with that is that our values or our moral code aren't always a really good survival tactic, to be honest. Take Honesty, for instance. We can agree that honesty is a virtue, something we should strive to do. Lying is wrong. But lying could get you that promotion at work. Lying could get you out of trouble with your spouse. Lying could get you out of that seemingly bad situation. The value of honesty isn't always a very helpful survival tactic. Let's look at cheating on your spouse. That is wrong. But if our natural evolution instincts are telling us that we need to make strong and able-bodied and intelligent children for the procreation of the human race, then what good is monogamy? What good is staying faithful to your spouse when that person who walked past would give us much better children who would be very fit for survival? Now, I'm not saying that you should do any of this. Not at all. Please don't go to my boss when he gets back and say, "Pastor Rachel said that I can cheat on my spouse and lie to get a promotion." That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is this, that this idea that a moral code or these values that we have, that they're just part of the evolution process and a survival of the fittest mentality, it doesn't make sense. We have these values and this moral code of what is right and what is wrong. And that must come from somewhere. There must be some kind of higher power or God who has placed that within us. There must be someone out there who has created us to have these values, because it just makes no sense to be a part of evolution and just by chance, survival of the fittest. So the very fact that we're able to recognize this evil and this suffering in the world points to the very fact that there is a God. So then back to the big question of why. Then why does he allow it? Usually, I'm going to say usually because I'm going to explain, but usually human beings are not mindless robots. Now the exception might actually be myself sometimes. On a Wednesday night, if it's been a particularly long youth group and a particularly exuberant and vocal group of kids that night, I sometimes go on autopilot, I guess. I get home after the night and I sit down, and all of a sudden I've been watching like 2 hours of Netflix and I don't even remember turning on the TV. Sometimes I might be the exception, but usually humans are not mindless robots. A better person to ask that question would be my roommate, but she's sick today, so you can ask her later. We as humans have the ability to make our own choices. Some examples of some very important choices in my life. I was in grade 2, and it was very important. I had to make a big presentation on an animal. And so out of all of the animals I could have chosen to print off and cut out and glue onto my blue Bristol board, I chose very specifically the white-tailed deer. And I can remember very specifically that they have 42 teeth, and that's about it. And a white tail! Thank you! Now, I could have chosen everything, but I chose that animal. Another one was when I was 11, and I had a complete meltdown in the supermarket, and I was yelling and screaming and crying and just saying all kinds of nasty things to my parents. And I will give you that there were a lot of hormones involved because I was 11. But all those things I did and all those times I stomped my foot, those were unfortunately my choice too. I even had my own choice last night when I chose whether I would eat pizza for dinner or broccoli. I am glad to say, well, kind of glad to say, I chose broccoli. Yay. I'm on the keto diet. But basically, we all have choices. And I know these aren't actually important choices I made in life. But really, when you think about it, life is just made up of small, menial choices. Am I right? We all have the ability to make our own in life. And that is called free will. Free will means that God doesn't choose for us. He doesn't force us to eat broccoli at dinner, as much as I wish he would sometimes. He doesn't force us to do anything we actively don't want to do. He'll lead us and he'll guide us, of course, and he'll point us in the direction to go, but he doesn't force us. Now, the thing about free will is that means that every single person at any point in time can choose to make a choice that is absolutely, completely stupid. There was one time I was shopping. I love window shopping. It was a lot of fun when I was back in Toronto. Here it's a little limited, but that's okay. I was was worried I wouldn't be able to make this topic funny at all. Okay, I'm glad you're laughing. But I was window shopping one day in the mall back in Toronto, and it's a little different there because they have these things, I think they're like kiosks or vendors, little things in the mall, like in the hallway where you can look past and they're selling their wares too. And so I was walking past. I was a broke college student intending to not actually spend money. So the first mistake was just being in the mall. So I'm walking along and this one vendor really caught my eye. And he was selling some hair care products. He was selling some nail stuff. And I really, really liked this nail kit I saw. And he let me try it, second mistake. And I really liked it, and it was $80, and I decided to buy it. And the reason I bought it was, first of all, because it made my nails look really nice, and secondly, because the vendor told me I looked like Beyonce. And so there were some red flags in that decision. First off, that flattery was one of the things that got me to spend $80. But the next red flag happened when I walked into Shoppers the next day and saw the same thing for $5. Ugh, it's the worst. So some choices are less smart than others. And luckily, with that choice, the only thing that actually got hurt was one, my wallet, and two, my pride, because now I have to share that for a sermon example. But it didn't cause any large amount of suffering in the world, thankfully. But there are times when the choices that people make hurt other people. And I know we've all seen that because some of us have done it and some of us have been affected. Free will means we have the ability to do either good or to fill this world with more evil and more suffering. And there's times where that happens and it's sad. We saw that just a few weeks ago. With the man who killed 10 people in Toronto. We see that free choice hurt people when we have our child is being bullied at school. We see those choices hurting people when that coworker at work is just driving us crazy and making our life miserable. The free will God offers us means that people make bad choices sometimes that spread evil and suffering in the world. So then back to the big question, why? Why in the world would God bother giving us free will if he knew we were just going to mess it up? And that takes us back to the very beginning. Back when humanity first started, when God had created the first humans, Adam and Eve, and put them in the garden in Genesis 3. Adam and Eve were in paradise. Adam and Eve had everything they needed. They could literally walk and talk with God in the garden. And they had all kinds of options for eating. They could eat fruit from any tree in the entire garden, just not that one in particular. Just not that one. Any other tree, any other fruit, just not that one. From the very beginning, God had decided to give humans a choice. Adam and Eve could have chosen to obey God, to ignore that tree and live in bliss. Or they could choose to directly disobey and go eat from that one tree. And they chose to disobey. With that free will, they messed up. And that was the first sin. That was the first wrong choice, and humans have been sinning and making wrong choices ever since. We call that the fall. So then why would God knowingly give Adam and Eve free will if he knew they were just going to mess it up? If we were going to keep messing it up? Still back to the why. Because God's purpose, one of his purposes in creating us, in creating humans, was so that we could have a relationship with him. But love must be a free choice, or is it really love? God has already chosen us. He created us to be in relationship with him. He gave us life. He gave his life so that we could continue to be in relationship with him. We have already been chosen, but we need to choose him as well. Now, has anyone ever seen any of these funny wedding cake toppers? I think they're funny. Now, we like to laugh at them. We like to laugh at the excited bride and the groom sadly watching as his bachelor life disappears. But there is some truth in this. And I don't mean that marriage is bad, because marriage is good. What I mean is that in a relationship where both parties have not freely chosen to love and to be together, there is a lack of joy and of intimacy. And I think we would probably be able to see that on that little guy's face over there. If we have not freely chosen, is it really love? Is it a real relationship? If I was forced to marry someone, well, one, I wouldn't be happy. But two, that wouldn't be real love. It wouldn't be a real relationship, and there wouldn't be the joy that you can find in a marriage in that. I just end up with a lot of bitterness and a lot of what ifs. God doesn't want a relationship with him to look like one of those wedding cake toppers. He wants it to be full of the love and the joy and the intimacy that comes with choosing each other. And we can't do that without free will. We have to be able to choose. And unfortunately, oftentimes people take that gift, take the gift of free will and choice, and use it to hurt other people and to spread suffering in this world. And that's one reason why we can find evil and suffering in this world. Now, the second reason, the second answer to this question, how can God allow evil, is it's for the greater good. I'm going to be completely transparent for you. And you might think I'm not spiritual or that I'm immature and my 23 years of age is showing. But I hate that answer. I hate when people tell me it's for the greater good. I hate when I'm really upset about something and someone comes over to me and says, it's going to be okay, Rachel. It's all going to work out for good. Rachel, there's a reason for the season of pain that you're in. Rachel, God has a purpose for these tears. I hate hearing that. And maybe you're going to think I'm unspiritual, but that's just part of me. But as much as I hate hearing it, because in the moment I'm hurting, as much as I hate hearing it, and as much as sometimes people can be more sensitive in how they say it, it's true. Sometimes God will allow something evil to happen because it will result in something better later. We see this in the story of Joseph. Joseph was the favored son in his family. Joseph was his dad's golden boy out of all of his older brothers. And sibling rivalry is a real thing, especially in this case, because his brothers got a little fed up with that. And Joseph ended up being thrown into a pit and sold into slavery. Now, that doesn't sound like a good way of sibling bonding to me. It doesn't sound like a fun family outing. It sounds like enduring years away from his loved ones. It sounds like pain to his parents who thought he had died. It sounds like years of abuse and of slavery and of suffering that he had to endure. This is a situation full of suffering, if I've ever heard one. And yet, when you look ahead, when you look through the whole story, because we have that privilege with the Bible, when you look at it, you see that through the suffering, eventually, Joseph comes to a place where he gets into a position of authority, to the point where he's second only to Pharaoh in the whole land. You see that years later, he's in a position to help many people, including his own family, to save them from a terrible famine. After enduring years and years of suffering, Joseph is able to say to the brothers who betrayed him, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." That's perspective if I ever heard it. God allowed Joseph to go through the suffering to prevent greater suffering later. Now, that's the thing about perspective. In the moment, you don't see what's going to happen. In the moment, there's pain and there's hurt. But when you look back later, you can see God's hand at work. When I was 12, some of you have heard this story already, but when I was 12, my dad ended up leaving us. And in the moment, believe me, I asked a lot of why questions, very directed at God too. I could see no good in being abandoned. I could see no good in the situation at all. Everything just seemed 10 times harder all of a sudden. And all of a sudden, we had to be on welfare until my mom found a job. And even then, we still had to use the food bank. And all of a sudden, I had pain and I had hurt. All of a sudden, I felt unlovable. And all of a sudden, I had all these wounds that I had to deal with. I felt hurt and unlovable, and I couldn't understand why. But looking back, like Joseph, with perspective, I can look at that time in my life and see it as God's mercy on me and my family. Because my dad wasn't in a good place back then. He was a toxic person to be around. And if I had lived with his influence through my teenage years, I don't know if I would be a Christian today. I don't think I would be. If I had to live with that influence, at the very least, I wouldn't be standing up here. I'd be a very sad and confused Christian. looking back with perspective, God allowed me to go through that pain as a kid because he knew that it was for my benefit in the long run. It was for the benefit of my family. That pain was for my own greater good. And sometimes that greater good means that we also need to learn a lesson. I don't like learning lessons. Once again, I'm just being honest. I don't think anyone likes learning lessons. But suffering in our lives can teach us and it can help us to grow. And that's something that my mom was a huge, huge fan of. Well, not a fan, maybe I'm phrasing that wrong. But my mom was a very big believer in me figuring things out myself. My mom would often allow me to go through frustrating times so that I could learn and grow from it and build character or whatever she told me at the time. And I was not a fan. I'm going to be completely honest. I complained and I whined all the time. I said, Mom, come on. Like, you could just fix this for me. You know how. Mom, can't you just talk to that person for me? I don't want to deal with them. Mom, this is so frustrating. Can't you just... All the arm movements would come out because I just get too frustrated to keep talking. And of course, she never did. I just kept complaining and I had to figure it out myself. And as much as I hated to admit it at the time, she was always right. Because out of all those situations, I always came out of it having learned something or with a new skill set or learning maybe I shouldn't do that again with stronger character. And oftentimes, because God is our Father, oftentimes he's a lot like my mom in that. Or maybe my mom's like him, to be more honest. Oftentimes God will allow us to go through something hard because it teaches us something in the long run. What we have to endure might be no fun, but it's worth what we'll take away from it. And I know that's hard because in the moment, you don't care. It hurts and there's pain and you can't see what's going to happen in the future. But remembering to think with perspective like Joseph, one day I'll understand. One day God will work this out for good. It's a hard perspective to find, but when you do find it, it can be so helpful in the midst of trying times. And this has been a lot of the greater good and a lot of free will. And one thing that I recognize is that the problem of evil isn't actually just one problem. The problem of evil is actually two problems. Because there's the intellectual problem of evil, the one that can be discussed, that I can preach about. We can talk about free will and the greater good. You can research it. I wrote a philosophy paper about it in school once. It can be discussed with some friends over a laugh and a couple of cups of coffee. But then there's the emotional problem of evil. Because you can understand the ideas of free will and the greater good in your head, but you can be completely confused because you are the one suffering right now and because you are the one hurting, and it just doesn't make sense why. The intellectual problem of evil. All of these philosophical and theological notions are great and good and help with understanding and the intellectual block that we might have of how can we believe in God. But all of those philosophies and ideas, they rarely touch our hearts when we need them. Philosophical ideas and notions, they don't cause suffering and pain to just disappear. When I was in my third year of college, this was something that I really struggled through because, to be honest, my first week or two of my third year of college was just a nightmare. It was awful. Within the span of 1.5 weeks, just everything seemed to fall apart. I'd found out that a friend of mine had tried to kill herself. I'd found out that another friend of mine was going through some really, really heavy personal stuff, and she came to me and said that she was abandoning her faith. I had a lot of relationships in my life that I was trying to cut off and put boundaries in, and if you've been there, that's a hard thing to do. And I was having some difficulties in my relationship with my dad, and it just, one on its own was enough. But all of that in 1.5 weeks, it just felt like too much. And it left me asking why. I'd written papers, I'd read books, I knew the right answers, but I didn't care. I didn't care because it touched my head but not my heart. I didn't care because I was in pain. I didn't care because I wasn't looking to the future, I was looking at the right now, and I said, why? I said, why me, God? Why this? Why them? I said, I'm serving you, God. I'm obedient. I've dedicated my whole life to you. Why are you letting this happen to me? I didn't care about people's free will. I didn't care about the greater good, because all I could see was the right there and the right now and my own pain. And that's when I really needed someone to help me, because that week and the following weeks, that's all I could think about. And I went and I sat down with a friend one day, and I was just pouring out my heart to her, telling her everything going on in my life, explaining all of these big why questions. And she said something that cut through the haze of confusion and anger with God. She said, Rachel, you know, you're really asking the wrong questions. I said, what are you talking about? What, have you not heard what I've been saying? Have you not seen me as I'm crying? Like, what? Why would you say that? What do you mean I'm asking the right? What question should I be asking then? I was a little frustrated. And she said, Rachel, why isn't the right question? That's not going to do anything. The question you should be asking is, are you going to trust him anyways? And that question has followed me. That question has followed me for the last few years. It's followed me on a trip across the country. This question has followed me through times of loneliness and despair. This question has followed me through struggles with mental health and conflicts with people. Every time I feel like I want to ask why, this question comes to mind, will I trust him anyways? Because sometimes our whys don't get answered. Not this side of heaven. Sometimes we're just not going to know for sure. I know that this question has followed me because what Jesus said was right. He said, in this world, you will have trouble. Life is hard, and there's going to be struggles, and there's going to be pain and hardship. We all know that because we've all been through that. Suffering makes no exceptions. Pain becomes a part of every life at some point. But Jesus was also right when he continued and said, but take heart, because I have overcome the world. Pain and suffering and evil are difficult, and they're hard to walk through and to endure or to witness. But the good thing is that they are all temporary. They don't last forever. It seems like sometimes you're in this dark tunnel with everything pressing in around you, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and that light is Jesus Christ. Because despite being in that tunnel, despite the pain and the suffering, it's temporary. And our relationship with God is not temporary. Our God has overcome evil and pain and suffering and even death. The trying time that you're walking through right now, that's not forever. Because eventually you will come out of that and you will still have that relationship with God. It will end. Because not only has God overcome, but he offers us victory as well. So as we wait for that day then, as we wait for the end to our suffering and our pain and the evil in this world, we have this to remember in 1 Corinthians. God is the Father who is full of mercy. And he is the God of all comfort. He comforts us every time we have trouble so that we can comfort others when they have trouble. We can comfort them with the same comfort that God gives us. We have a God willing to offer us comfort in every time, every circumstance, every situation. Because despite the pain and despite the suffering, God is real and God is good. Despite the pain and the suffering, God has a plan that is bigger. Through the pain and through the suffering, God is there and he offers us comfort. So through the pain and through the suffering, you have to figure out what you're going to ask yourself. Are you going to ask yourself why? Or are you going to ask yourself, will I trust him anyways?